हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
People in general, especially in this age of Kali, are enamored by the external energy of Krishna. And they wrongly think that by advancement of material comforts, every man will be happy. They have no knowledge that the material or external nature is very strong. For everyone is strongly bound by the stringent laws of material nature. The living entity is happily the part and parcel of the Lord. And thus, his natural function is to render immediate service to the Lord. By the spell of illusion, one tries to be happy by serving his personal sense gratification in different forms which will never make him happy. Instead of satisfying his own personal material senses, he has to satisfy the senses of the Lord. That is the highest perfection of life. The Lord wants this, and he demands it. One has to understand the central point of this central point of Gita. Our Krishna conscious movement is teaching the whole world this central point. Because we are not polluting the theme of Bhagavad Gita as it is, anyone seriously interested in deriving benefit by studying the Gita must take help from the Krishna conscious movement for practically understanding of the Bhagavad Gita under the direct guidance of the Lord. We hope, therefore, that people will derive the greatest benefit by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, as we have presented it here. And even if one man becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, we shall consider our attempts as success. So this is signed A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, 12th May 1971, Sydney, Australia, of all places. Like that. A remote corner of the planet, but not as remote as Perth. Perth is officially the remotest city in the world. The farthest from any other, city like that. So even in the middle of the Congo, there's a city closer than Perth, like that. Yeah. So here, Prabhupada is very boldly making this statement, this thing that Prabhupada brings up again and again. He's always brought it up, leading from the Lilamrita, that he would say is that so many people, as it is now, there's many, many people who understand that there's something wrong in the world, something's not going correctly. But they will always try to make some kind of solution that's economic, political, like this. You give people more facilities, they'll be happy. People are, there's unrest because there's no facilities. Or because of their political leadership, you change that, then they'll be happy. Or they have to be, more religious or something and this, give more, be more welfare, be more kind to people. Something that they're all professing as their solution. But Prabhupada's point has always been, and as we see here, is making the same point, is this only a spiritual solution. There are no other solutions. The only solution to any problem is spiritual. So it's very, very important to note that. Based on spiritual, then you make plans. Right? It's a spiritual solution, so you make plans for that spiritual solution. Because most of the time it's thought spiritual, okay, that's philosophy, that's theory. It's not actually something practical. But the principle is that no, spiritual is very practical. Most 3/4 of the cosmic creation works on spiritual. Right? And it seems to be doing quite fine like that. And actually 90% of the living entities are in that spiritual world, and it's going quite well. So only 10% are over here. And then they are thinking that they have solutions that will be different from how the majority of the cosmic creation functions. Right? So that's the thing, is there isn't material solution doesn't work. It may give something temporary, but again, the problem comes up. So you can only, since spiritual is eternal, you can only actually solve a problem with spiritual, because it's the only thing that lasts. Then in that, then you make a practical plan. Right? That's the next step. Then you make a practical plan. But the problem is that it's thought that, oh, if it's spiritual, it's just theory. And so we need something practical, down to earth, something we can, you know, get our teeth into. Like that. But the problem is that it may be a plan, but what is the plan based on? Right? So it's practical, yes, but what if you go behind the practical, why would you choose that practical? Why would you choose that method? Because you have some idea on how it will work. Right? Okay, we change the style of government, then that will make everything better. Right? You know, there's monarchy, so you make oligarchy, you don't like that, then you make democracy or socialism or communism, something like that. You just keep changing it. This one doesn't work, you try that one. But that's the idea. Then they're making a practical plan on that, so they still are working with the theory. The theory is, if I change from this political platform to that political platform, then everything will be fine. That's the theory. Right? Then they make a practical plan on it. So why is it any different to base it on the spiritual and then make a practical plan? The difference is spiritual is proven. The material has never proven itself to work smoothly. Right? The only occasion where we see spirit material works nicely is it is when it's in conjunct with the spiritual. Those who have followed the spiritual culture and made their decisions on that, their plans work. Right? So they get better material facility, and they go back to Godhead. Right? Can't get better than that, right? What is it? Best of both worlds. Right? So, but that's how it works. It means it's got to be spiritual. Then you add this world to that. That works. It's not a matter of, oh, you take something from here and something from there. No, it's you take from there, and then you apply that to here. That's the difference. That works. That's practical. So Prabhupada's saying, therefore, one has to take this Krishna consciousness. The only way you're going to get a spiritual solution, that's going to come from reading Bhagavad Gita, studying Bhagavad Gita, and that you're going to find in the Krishna consciousness movement. If it's not the Krishna consciousness movement, you won't find these answers. Because others aren't interested. They have other purposes. So then he's saying, therefore it'll be done. This is the point. And it's such a valuable work that even if one person becomes God conscious, Prabhupada considers his work has been fruitful. Right? One person. So that means, so why would that be? Why would we, in an age when everything is big and all that, why would we be happy if even one person became God conscious?
He'll make so many others.
He'll make so many others, yes. Okay.
Because Krishna will be happy.
Because Krishna will be happy. So that means God is happy if even one living entity becomes God conscious. Right? If even one. So that's how valuable the movement is. So we're so used to, you know, hundreds of thousands and this and that. So that's good. That shows that it's even more wonderful. But even if one person's God conscious, that's special. Right? That's the thing. So we always have to keep that in mind, that Krishna is happy, even if one. He's more happy, of course, if more people are. But if one person is, then that makes it very nice for him. Okay, now into the introduction. Let's see how this works. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, so we have the introduction. said, O Magyana, I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. This is your, what do you call it? Chatubandha, Chatubandha? No. Anubandha Chatushtaya, yeah. Is the introduction that has to establish the worship of a deity, respect of that deity, what the book is for, who is the audience, what results you can get from that, and much of the time, you know, what are the subject matter of the book. Right, so that will all be established here. So now is the opening, the respect to the deity. Many will do this in one verse. Many consider that it's only a one verse thing or a two or three verse thing, but it can be even much beyond that. It can include a full detailed table of contents like that. Like Chanakya does that in the Arthashastra, many, many pages. Sutta Goswami does that in the Mahabharata. It's actually one whole chapter like that. So sometimes we will consider, oh, this is not there. But the point is all this has to be established. So depending if one verse will do it, fine. Why bother with more? Bhagavatam uses three verses, right? Like that as your direct introduction. But you can see is basically your first canto is establishing what's going on. Because the Bhagavatam discussion actually starts in the second canto. It means what was the discussion of Sukadeva Goswami starts in the second canto. But the question of the sages, which is then how we understand the Bhagavatam, what's the approach, that's the whole first canto. Right? So we see as it's going through those, establishing what's there, so we can see what is happening. So, in other words, it's a very important concept that must be established in a literature. And then from that, we see is that, how do you say? It's up to the writer, the author, you know, how to best get that done. So the standard forms, so then they're using. So this is here, prayers is pretty standard. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world a mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master and unto the feet of all Vaishnavas. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami, along with his elder brother Sanatan Goswami, as well as Raghunath Das and Raghunath Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta, and Srila Jiva Goswami. I offer my respectful obeisances to Lord Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, along with Advaitacharya, Garadhar, Srivas, and other associates. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna, along with their associates, Sri Lalita and Vishakha. Oh, my dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I offer my respects to Radharani, whose bodily complexion is like molten gold, and who is the queen of Vrindavan. You are the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, and you are very dear to Lord Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They can fulfill the desires of everyone, just like desire trees, and they are full of compassion for the fallen souls. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Nityananda, Sri Advaita Garadhar, Sri Vas, and all others in the line of devotion. Then Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so now here then, in this introduction, it itself stands as its own basic work, because it establishes what is in the Gita, what will be, you know, studied, understood from the Gita. And so it becomes, you know, it's a very nice, it itself is actually 30 pages. So in here then, in this introduction, then the main points that are given, 6 points are given here. One is the spirit in which the Gita should be approached. Because without having that, you won't actually get the benefit. You'll miss what's going on. So that mood that is necessary, that must be understood. Then the purpose of the Gita. Otherwise, if you're reading, if you don't know what it's for, then what are you going to do with it? Right? Purpose means, What is the options that is there? What is the potential that can be gained, right? So this is all, Then the subject matter means you have your, what is the actual subject matter? Because otherwise you may think it's something else, right? You know, it's just like, you know, the famous one is that Arjuna, you know, Krishna and Arjuna are on the battlefield and the chariot and all that, but it's not actually a battlefield in that. It's, you know, the chariot of the mind driven by the senses. That's why in one of our paintings, one of our devotees, from this, they misunderstood. They gave Arjuna's chariot 5 horses when there's actually only 4 because they got it from this analogy. I think this is Dr. Radhakrishnan or something like that. Prabhupada was not overly pleased. Very nice painting, but that he used 5 horses based on that, you know. That's an analogy given later, but it's not actually what was there, because applying that to the actual situation means then you're thinking that the whole thing's an analogy, right? You know, which is one of the diseases of the modern academics, is they always think that these things, that they can't explain them, you know, in the way of, you know, what was perceivable by their senses and makes sense to them, then they always will try to say it's an analogy, right? You're just, you know, this is an idea. It's not actually there. They weren't actually on a battlefield like that. So, means it has to be very clear what is the subject matter, what it's supposed to do. Then the process of understanding the Gita means this is how, what process you're going to go through to understand. Right, means because the process is self-realization. How are you going to go step by step through this to apply it in your life so you understand? Right? Because if you don't understand, you can't apply it. And if you can't understand it or apply it, how are other people going to understand it or apply it? Does that make sense? Then the fifth, the result of understanding the knowledge presented, going back to Godhead, and how to practically apply this knowledge to obtain the desired result. Right? So now these 6 points are being made here in the Gita. These are also the points of Anubandha Chatushtaya, of an introduction. So this whole introduction is a 30-page, Mangalacharan. You know, it's just the opening to the book that some do in one verse. He's doing it in a whole introduction, 30 pages. So here we see is these first 4 points. These are sambandha, the spirit in which one should approach the Gita, the purpose of the Gita, the subject matter of the Gita, and the process of understanding the Gita. This is sambandha, right? This is all relationship. What is the relationship between you, the book, and, you know, the field that is described that you would apply this knowledge in? Then the fifth one, the result of understanding the knowledge presented, going back to Godhead, that's your prayojana, right? That's your goal that you're trying to get. Then the sixth is the abhideya, how to practically apply this knowledge to attain the desired result. Notice here it's very important to understand, in understanding the principle of the difference between sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, is that elements of these abhideya and prayojana are in sambandha, but it's not actually the application. Right? So just like you can say the process of understanding the Gita. So you can say, well, that's abhideya, that's process. No, that's the theory. What is the process? What is the mechanics of it? Not the doing of it. Right? The sixth one is how to practically apply. That's the application. But the science of application and all that, technical, what is there, why it should be there, that's still sambandha. But when you're showing, now this is what you should do in your life, this is how you use it, that's abhideya. Right? So this is not necessarily well understood. Then the subject matter, okay, that's obvious that must be sambandha because that's what it's about. The spirit in which the Gita should be approached, okay, we can take that. The purpose, then we'll see purpose is what result you're getting. But no, that purpose means what you can get if you operate it, not getting it. Does that make sense? So there's a difference there. These things are important because the idea is that you can tell the difference in these aspects, then you'll be able to apply these subtleties in your life. Otherwise, if not, then it won't work very well. And it's important to be able to appreciate these, because human life is based on subtlety. Spiritual life is based on subtlety. You know, the whole interaction is based on subtlety. We don't appreciate the subtlety. The problem comes is that so many things within the human sphere will be missed. And then we'll be looking for a material solution to this when it actually is simply appreciating the subtleties of the philosophy. Right? If you're going to appreciate that, that shows you its application in your day-to-day life. So what is the problem? What is the problem with monarchy? Right? There's a problem. We've seen a problem in history. What is the problem?
When they stop listening to Brahmins.
They stop listening to Brahmins. So what's the effect?
They misuse their power.
They misuse their power. Right?
Yeah.
So then, so is actually monarchy the problem or the misuse of monarchy the problem?
Misuse.
It's a misuse. So now, do you actually solve the problem by going from monarchy to oligarchy?
No.
Right? We all know what oligarchy is. Oligarchy means where you have a few very qualified persons chosen who they manage the society as opposed to one person. You have a king, then, you know, that's a monarchy. Then you remove that and you have an oligarchy, that's a republic.
Right. The aristocracy.
Yeah, the aristocracy like that. Some will be certain persons, certain families that can get into that, or it can be based on who's qualified. Better is who's qualified. But whatever it is.
A committee,
it can be, but they are actually responsible. They have to actually manage. They are administrators rather than advisors. But it is a committee, but they take responsibility. But the oligarchy who it worked, then that kind of disappeared in 27 BC, like that, with Augustus, you know, taking over. But before that it worked because it was very strong. They took responsibility. But because they were fighting amongst themselves, because it's an oligarchy, they're trying to put themselves on top of the other ones, so it creates, you know, all this war, civil war. People get tired of that, and so they'd rather have one guy just tell them what to do, so then they go back to autocracy, like that. So this is the thing. So we understand is the problem is not the system, the problem is the misuse of it. Therefore, as Prabhupada mentions in a few places here and there, he's making a point. It doesn't matter what the political system is. It doesn't matter. If they're God conscious, it'll work. Any system can work, right? Because it's all part of the Vedic system. But it's just a matter of if you're God conscious, only it can work. Because changing from one to other doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter because the faults found in the one will be found in the next because the same people are doing it. The same class of people, you know, from there is the king. If you remove him because he has his bad character, if you replace him with a group of persons, it's the same people. You know what I'm saying? They're not different people. So they're going to make the same mistakes. You understand? So, therefore, God consciousness is the only solution. Right? Does that make sense? So then, in here is that then... So you have, in understanding all these different parts, then you can understand the subtleties. Because that's what's going to make it work, not changing the gross form. Right? Because we can say we can change the gross form, but what remains the same? The subtlety, the mind, intelligence, and false ego of the people. So we've changed the gross form, but the subtle form remained the same. Therefore, it's a problem. So, since the gross is controlled by the subtle, what's the subtle controlled by? The spiritual. So the only solution is spiritual. That will then change the subtle, which will then therefore make the gross work properly. Right? So that's why it's important to be able to appreciate these fine points. Right? So they're not just being picky or hair splitting or all that. They are only hair splitting or that if you're not going to practically apply them. But if you're applying them, then how is that hair splitting? You know what I'm saying? It's not hair splitting if it's being practically applied and it's working. Right? But the only way to get something if it's not working, then you have to look at, oh, maybe the form's wrong. If the form seems to be in order and it's still not working, that means there's something subtle not working. A mentality's wrong. Something else is wrong. Right? And if that's wrong, then why is that wrong? So maybe there's a spiritual misunderstanding. Maybe that's okay, but you don't know how to connect the subtle to the spiritual. So there's something there, so you don't understand the sambandha between the spiritual, the subtle, and the gross. So that's what sambandha does. Describes that. What is the mood? What is the purposes you can get? What is the actual subject matter itself? Right? And then the processes for understanding. So in here we would take generally the subject matter of the Gita to be sambandha. The result, you know, how to practically apply is abhideya, and the result is prayojana. That's true. But in that, the sambandha, the subject matter, includes the spirit in which you approach that subject matter, the process for understanding that subject matter, and the purpose of that subject matter. Right? So then you have all those different aspects. Okay? Does that make sense? So you have the subtlety. The subtle forms are there. So the subject matter itself is the main thing. I can say is the root of the sambandha. Then you can say the spirit in which it is understood or to be approached. The spirit in which it's to be approached is then the sambandha within the sambandha. Right? Is that so? You have the right attitude so you can actually deal with it properly. Then the process of understanding the Gita would be the abhideya within sambandha. And then the purpose of the Gita would be your prayojana within sambandha. Right? Because each one can be divided into three. So sambandha, if that's correct, then abhideya prayojana will work fine. So the main emphasis is on understanding the sambandha, which is theory. But that theory is actually coming from the applied process. Right? So until you know who you are, what is the situation, and what you're dealing with, what you want to get out of it, then how are, and what is the mood in which you'll deal with all that, how will you get any result? Right? If you don't know you're in a bus stand, how are you going to buy a ticket? You know, if you go up to the counter and order, you know, a burger, yeah, they're just going to look at you funny. You know, it is a counter, it is a window, there is a guy sitting behind there, you know. There are things up there, you know, listed with you know, numbers afterwards, you know, prices. But you're still not going to get your burger. Why? Because you've misunderstood where you are. You understand? Does that make sense? And now if you start yelling and screaming, you know, about the bad, you know, service, and you're going to talk to the manager, are you going to figure it out? No. So that's why the spirit must be there. You must actually understand the subject. Then you can go about what is the process and your purpose so you can get there. Right? So that's the whole thing. Then these things go well. So this is very, very important that these kind of things are understood. Okay? So then, okay. So now, opening here. Bhagavad Gita is also known as Gita Upanishad. It is the essence of Vedic knowledge and one of the most important Upanishads in Vedic literature. Now it's here called an Upanishad. Bhagavad Gita is an Upanishad because it is giving the essence of the Upanishads. So it's taking from all the Upanishads, giving that essential, and so therefore Gita Upanishad is special in that way. So basically, except for, you know, some smartas, everybody studies Gita. You know, and accepts it as, this is philosophy. They're not saying those, there's this, then there's beyond that Upanishad. No one says that. Like that. Of course, there are many commentaries in English on the Bhagavad Gita. And one may question the necessity for another one. The present edition can be explained in the following way. Recently, an American lady asked me to recommend an English translation of Bhagavad Gita. Of course, in America, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita available in English. But as far as I have seen, not only in America, but also in India, none of them can be strictly said to be authoritative, because in almost every one of them, the commentator has expressed his own opinions without touching the spirit of Bhagavad Gita as it is. So here is your opening point. Here is that after the Mangalachar, his first thing is the spirit of approach. That's not right. Nothing will be right. So therefore, that means not only Bhagavad Gita, but Prabhupada's instructions. If the spirit's not right, it won't work. Right? It means, of course, to that degree it is right, you'll get benefit. To that degree it is wrong, it'll be there. So you're dealing, it's pretty nice. It works pretty good. It's basically, you could say, foolproof. And we are the fools. So it still works despite us. Yes?
Maharaj, recently I met somebody who is giving lectures about Bhagavad Gita. So she said that, yeah, you can read this Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita if you're a beginner, but then you should study some other commentaries also.
And who are these other commentaries? Like Vishwanath, Baladev?
Yes.
But the point is anybody who could say that means they haven't understood a word that Baladev or Vishwanath said. Because whatever they say in their commentaries is in here. So you can look at Baladev and Vishwanath's commentaries to actually get an insight to what Srila Prabhupada said. Right? Because Prabhupada, in speaking here, then he'll speak in English. He'll actually translate the words or that into phrases that to you sound like normal English. But they're not. They're actually traditional Sanskrit, words and phraseology. Right? And we misunderstand that. So we think because he doesn't use all the fancy terms, then it's more academic. But now, is that the commentary itself, or is that the people who translated the commentary? You understand? The people who translated left the words in their Sanskrit form. Right? And expect that someone who's reading that commentary would be a little bit more scholarly and academic. And so they would appreciate it being in that form because it speaks to them. It's more academic, more intellectual in that way, seemingly. And they say they don't actually know how to translate them actually fully into English. They won't agree with that point, though, but I think we could win in a court of law on that one. Because the point is Prabhupada has, and the worst part is that they're so smart, they haven't figured out that that's what Prabhupada's done. They haven't figured out that Prabhupada's just translated it down where the common man off the docks, you know, can read the book and get benefit. While Vishwanath and Baladev's, you know, they'd have to be pretty intellectual to appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So, one can say these things, but unfortunately, people like that shouldn't be allowed to, you know, give discourses in our temples. Because what have they actually understood? What have they understood? Rupa Goswami says you approach the previous acharyas through your acharya. So even if you're reading Baladev and Vishwanath, you have to understand it in light of how Prabhupada has presented it. If you don't, you're not in our Sampradaya. It's that simple. And no one in our Sampradaya will accept you. They just won't. It's like this. You're in Vrindavan. You have to be able to rely upon somebody. Right? You have service to do for Krishna. Your business is serious business. You're trying to please Krishna. Right? And that means services are done at certain times. Right? You don't have that big of a window. Right? Because whoever you are, you have your time to get it done. There's only so much time he's at Mother Jashoda's house. There's only so much time he's out in the field with the coward boys. There's only so much time he's with the gopis. So that means in that window of opportunity, you have to get your service done. So that means you have to rely upon people. And that means there's a chain of command. You have to be able to rely upon that chain of command. And someone who wants to skip over their authority and then say they're working under another authority, who in Vrindavan would want such a person? Who would want them? Who would trust them? So one should think about that before one takes that line of thought. That you can take that line of thought, but you will be in this material world for as long as you maintain that. You will never get out of here. There's not one resident of Vrindavan who will give you any support. I mean none, zero. And if you want confirmation of this, then read in Vishwanath's book on Raghubharata Chandrika and see what he says about people who do this. He says, people who do this, the residents of Vrindavan do not trust them. They'll respect them from a distance, but they'll never trust them. That's all. So that's what you're playing with. It's not a game. It's not because you feel like it. It's not a game. It's serious. Like that. Rupa Goswami gives this thing. You have to approach the spiritual master, but you must approach, and all the other spiritual, but you have to approach through him. You can't jump over him. You can't say, well, here, but then over there, they give more. Nobody gives more than what Prabhupada's given. I think they forget who he is. Right? Why would Srila Prabhupada be writing something of a lesser degree than Vishwanath or Baladev when they're all from the same place? Right? They all do service together in Vrindavan, in the Nitya, eternal pastimes. They're buddies. Why would they be saying something different? Just each of them comes at their particular time, one after another. I mean, you know, it's like that. Somebody has to be here. Right? Does that make sense? So, why would they be saying something different? That's the problem. And even if it is more technical, what are they going to do with it? You know what I'm saying? What will they do with it? They'll be able to do minimal with it. You know, a few intellectual things this way, that way. But they won't. They won't be able to deal with this stuff. Is that okay? So one has to be very, very careful on these things. Is that one should never think oneself as more intellectual than one's spiritual master. It's never a good sign to Krishna or his eternal associates. They don't appreciate this. You know, as we saw in the story of, I think it was, what was his name? I can't remember. One of the Chakrabartis, I think. I think that was, but I can't remember. But whatever it is, he in a dream then came before Lord Chaitanya and surrendered, you know, and then he passed them down to Nityananda like this until it got down the parampara to his spiritual master. You know, once he got to the spiritual master, then the spiritual master brought him back and introduced him to everybody. Then everybody accepted him. Because in the spiritual world, no one's going to accept you direct. Is your grandfather going to accept your affection that you disregard your relationship with his son? Right? Is the grandfather going to accept that you come and say that you're my father? No, he's a grandfather. Grandfather's more tasty than father. Right? You had attaching your son, now this is your son's son. Right? And then great-grandson's even more far out. Right? So like that. So that's the parampara. So the farther you are in the back, the more sweet it is. But unfortunately, in mundane idea, if I'm not right in the front and doing it myself, then it's not possible for me to get the mercy. Right? Mercy doesn't fall like gentle rain. It's taken by force, you know, like that. You go and get it, and then you know you have it, because you can't trust anybody else who would actually let it come to you. Right? Isn't that what Shakespeare said? You don't know. Okay, so this is that point, is that if without touching that spirit, you actually haven't caught what the book is about. So in this case, they haven't caught the spirit. So they'll never know what Baladeva Vidya, anybody's saying. They absolutely won't know. Like that. The spirit, because what makes Vrindavan different from Mathura, or different from Dwarka, or different from Vaikuntha?
The mood.
The mood. So we're talking about the mood here, the spirit, the mood. What is the spirit that is active? You know, mood is more that of taste. Spirit's more of, you know, action. So that's the opening point. You don't have that. You won't understand it. So you can't understand Vrindavan unless you have the mood of Vrindavan. And the mood of Vrindavan is given by the Acharyas. And they say this is how it works. You know? Rupa Goswami is the main personality, right, in the line. But he's always respecting his elder brother, Sanatan, as his guru. But as far as the lineup goes in the spiritual world, Rupa's the main. So he's the main person, but he has no problem offering respect for his brother as a senior. Does that make sense? Next after him is Raghunath Das. And he respects Rupa and Sanatana. Does that make sense? So these kind of things that, you know, you work it out, oh, don't care for this one, just get to there, just get to the essence, you know, which is leaving out everybody else. Somehow or another, those who actually are in the pastimes don't buy this process. They're not interested in a modern, insecure, don't trust anybody mentality. Because full surrender means full trust. So if you're insecure, that means you don't trust. And if you don't trust, means you are not surrendered. So to that degree that you are surrendered actually means to that degree you are secure. Right? So that's the thing. We're not secure that Krishna will arrange everything so a spiritual solution will do it. We think I have to make a material arrangement because that depends upon myself. That will get my, that will ensure. So that means it's not surrender. It means why? Because your one's not secure. So this idea, I'm not this body, I'm serving a Krishna, is not actually strongly established. Otherwise, why wouldn't one surrender? Right? Krishna takes care. Right? What is the opening? What is one common thing about all the opening stories, the Mahabharata stories that are in the first canto of Bhagavatam? What's the one common theme about them?
Krishna takes care.
Krishna takes care. The first opening is bang, you're right there with Uttara running up to Krishna and saying, please protect my womb. Right? Because Ashwatthama is sent to Brahmastra. Right? Now, is that a dangerous situation or not? You're going to have a miniature, you know, how you say, nuclear explosion, you know, controlled nuclear explosion happen in your womb. Now, can it get any worse than that? You know, and we're not joking. We mean full-on nuclear explosion. But it's so well designed, it'll only blow up inside your womb. It won't even bother you. Just anything inside there will be, you know, slightly roasted. You understand? So that's how it opens. Right? Like that. Then after that, Bhishma Day. Then after, it just goes one after another. The Pandavas giving up everything, going to the forest. Why? So everything there, that full surrender, and we see full reciprocation. Krishna says, as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. So you have to surrender first, then he can reciprocate. Otherwise, what does he do? What are you supposed to do? Right? You meet another person. What's appropriate etiquette? You deal with them how you want to deal, or you deal with them how, what mood they're in. That's the point. So that's Krishna's point. What mood you're in is what he'll reciprocate with. So you're afraid of him. You think of him as, you know, death like that. Then he comes as death personified because that's how you see him. Right? You have faith in him, trust in him, then he'll take care. You know? Some of the acharyas comment on that. Draupadi. When Draupadi met Krishna later, then they had their own discussion. She asked, why did it take you so long, you know, to come and give the cloth? Like that. And says, no, as soon as you called the first time, I was immediately there. And she said, so why didn't you do anything? Because just as I was about to do something, then you turned to, you know, Bhishma and said, you know, you said, why aren't you doing something like that? So I said, okay, so then Bhishma will do something. And then he sat back. And then after that, then Then she called again. So I was about to do something, and then you turn to others, you know, Vidura and this one and that one. So only finally at the end, when nobody else was doing anything, then she threw her arms up and it was just Krishna. Then he did something. Right? So that's Krishna. Right? As you surrender, he can do something. If you don't surrender, how is he supposed to reciprocate? He's not going to do something that you don't appreciate in the relationship. Right? Of course, how you relate, that's, you know, it has this action reaction. So therefore you deal on the mundane platform, you will get the mundane results for whatever that activity is. That'll always be there. Justice must be there, right? So, but that justice, why is that justice there? This is the best part. Right? We think it's there because, you know, God's like that, and that's the way, you know, he's like this. No, he's establishing justice because only then can a field of activities go on nicely. What is the field of activities? Is it masculine or feminine? Feminine. So justice is an important element to the feminine class, not as much to the masculine. Right? Men just want to get something done. And, you know, past is past, it is over. If we've got it established, you move on. But women want justice. This has been done, the person should be punished. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, the law of karma here has to be done very exacting, that you do this, you get this result. You do that, you get that result. It has to be consistent, right? Because that's what the feminine nature expects from the masculine, is consistency. So he has to consistently create an environment of justice because that's what we want. You understand? So we're thinking it's all him. You know, so many of the world religions, you know, blame him. He's a wrathful God and he's this and he'll smite you and this and that. You know, but that's because that's what we want. That's what we expect. Otherwise, he'd be much happier just interacting very nicely and pleasantly. But that means we have to do that. You know, but if we're sitting there and pounding our fist and talking hellfire and brimstone, then of course, that's how he's going to reciprocate. Does that make sense? Yeah. And we're sorry if there's any Baptists in the audience. Like that, but... Okay, you know, like that. Yeah? Okay. The spirit of Bhagavad Gita is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita itself. It is just like this, like that. So when the Prabhupada says, it's just like this, he's meaning, this is the way it is. It's not a matter of, he's talking this and that. No, he's just saying, this is stating a fact. If we want to take a particular medicine, then we have to follow the directions written on the label. We cannot take the medicine according to our own whim or direction of a friend. It must be taken according to the directions on the label or the direction given by the physician. Right? So, who's the label? What's the label? Yeah, but it means the Gita, the Shastra. And what's the physician?
Krishna.
Krishna, or the Guru. Right? So, that's how it has to be taken, according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. There's not another way, you can't make it up. I mean, nowadays it's very popular. We make up our own thing. But just as you give this example, they would say, they would agree. So the same way goes here. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita should be taken or accepted as it is directly by the speaker himself. The speaker of Bhagavad Gita is Lord Sri Krishna. He is mentioned on every page of Bhagavad Gita as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So this is the first point in spirit. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. Right? So that's the first point that's being established in the spirit. You have to accept Krishna as God. That's the thing. Even if it's only theoretical, he'll go on to say, even if you don't believe it, at least you have to get appreciate the text, you have to work on that principle. You have to accept that this is how it's being presented here, so this is how you'd have to approach it. Right? So even for the academics, they can do this stuff. Amazingly, they can go into something to emulate the mood of someone who would be involved, but at the same time not be involved. You know, how they cultivate this, I'm not sure, but it seems to take, you know, a long time. That's probably why it takes so long to become a PhD, like that. So Prabhupada even offers that. Still, you try that, because had you tried it, you've done the right mood, then that aspect of self will connect to Krishna, and you'll actually get purified, that you'll then drop that mood. you know, and then just keep it that you actually have faith. But the first point is being made is he's Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, the word Bhagavan sometimes refers to any powerful person or any powerful demigod, right? Because someone may bring up Bhagavan means that, you know, Van is who has, Bhaga means qualities or you know, strength or opulences. So somebody else can be Bhagavan also. And certainly here Bhagavan designates Lord Krishna as a great personality, right? So he's, you know, not that, he's agreeing with that. Yes, according to that, he is a great personality, but we have to take it beyond that, right? But at the same time, we should know that Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as is confirmed by all great acharyas, spiritual masters like Shankaracharya, Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimbarka Swami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and many other authorities of Vedic knowledge in India. The Lord himself also establishes himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita, and he's accepted as such in the Brahma Samhita and all the Puranas, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as the Bhagavad Purana, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Therefore, we should take Bhagavad Gita as it is, directed by the Personality of Godhead himself. So he's establishing, so the point is that when a point comes up, then that point's taken. Yes, anything that is of value in there that is discussable, then that's taken from there. And from there, then you go on and establish your point. If there's nothing there, then you simply take what's there and just defeat that part. Right? But otherwise, you take what's there, and the part, then you move that forward, and in the process, you'll defeat the what's useless. So, that they say Bhagavan could refer to any great personality, yes. But then that does establish Krishna as a great personality. Right? It's not a matter of he's God or he's nobody. No. In any case, whether you accept him as God or not, he's a great personality. He's Bhagavan. Everybody here is Bhagavan Uvacha. Everybody, it's in the text. So that means he must be a great personality. He's not ordinary. But here, he's established in the work and in all other works, and also the acharyas have established that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, we should accept him in that way. So not only is he a great personality, but he's the greatest personality. If that is understood, then the Gita starts to make sense. Because not only is he going to establish these aspects of being the Supreme Person and that aspect of God, but he's also going to establish his relationship with the living entity. Right? So then we understand how, you know, we think if we're connected with special personalities, especially opulent personalities, powerful personalities, we'll be more secure. So why wouldn't we be the most secure with being connected with the most powerful personality? So that's your, in the spirit, that's your first step. You had something? That was just a itch. Okay. So that's, that of, if it means within the spirit, then we have 4 points. Like that. Krishna is the Supreme Lord Bhagavan. Second, Gita is understood by a devotee like Arjuna, who is in a direct relationship with Krishna. 3, only by the process of devotional service can one revive one's relationship with Krishna. And 4, therefore Bhagavad Gita should be taken up in a spirit of devotion. So as the introduction goes, it will go through all these steps. And that will establish this is the proper mood. Right? So he is God, we're his servants, we have a natural relationship with him through service. So therefore we should take up devotional service. Right, so we're going to have to establish that. So someone situated in devotional service, they actually can understand Bhagavad Gita. If we're not situated in devotional service or take that attitude, we won't understand Gita. Okay? Yes?
Does Srila Prabhupada mention there that Krishna himself says that he's the Supreme Lord, like the Hamsa
Vastra Prabhupada? That's what's coming next. In the 4th chapter, that's the next. Now Prabhupada, Krishna's going to say. But he's giving a broader range that he says, the acharyas say, all the Vedic literatures say, like that, then he'll go and give practical example. Because, see, much of the time you present the general rule before you give a detail. Like that, just so you establish it properly, if there's a need. If people are already comfortable with the details, you work through that. But otherwise, the general is given for it, so you give an overview. But the overview's point is then you're going to give a practical. Like that. So that's always used. The generally 3 levels. A very broad conceptual overview, then a more generic, then an overview that's more specific to the point, that gives you more practical what's going on, and then the exact details of how to apply it. But generally, the Vedic system will always use these 3 levels. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So you would have, let's say, Ayurveda, the concept of mucus, bile, and air, and how disease is simply the balance of those. Then you give more understanding of what is mucus, what is bile, what is air, what is the concept of those and all that, and their relationship to each other and kind of to disease. Then the third level would be exactly how this disease has come from, this imbalance, and so therefore what do you do to put it back? Does that make sense? So we'll see. Rupa Goswami, in the sixth chapter of Nectar Devotion, he gives the 64 items of devotional service. Right? Then he spends the rest of the chapters, up to the 19th chapter, explaining all that. Because right? that is the overview on which it's done. Because those 64 items are the basis of Vaidhi Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti, Prema Bhakti. They're all part of the same thing. Because the form will remain the same. So that's the form. That's the obvious thing we can see. Then you get into the subtleties and how it's. You get something? No? Okay. So ends here. Then today's what? Monday, right? Yeah, so we'll continue tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainita Gaura Premanandi.